At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to another episode of the DFL Swimming Podcast. Coming back at you after another week or so off. We got a good episode cooked up today. We got Dez over in Wisconsin enjoying some Christmas time with his family. We got a lot of teams out there going through some grueling winter training, so we thought that we'd bring a little bit of daylight to the end of the season and discuss some NCAA teams, some of the greatest teams of all time. So I hope you enjoy getting into this one.
We are in Wisconsin, back at the old stomping grounds here. Made it back home for Christmas break, be here for a week. Excited to talk about some swimming
today. Bring in a little bit of a different episode, maybe stay a little bit away, more away from news. So we're going to dive into a highly contested question, in my opinion, which is, What is the best men's NCAA swim team ever assembled? And we'll walk through kind of how we evaluate and go into a discussion. But before we do that, I think we should cover a couple of the major news items that have come up since our last episode. I think the most importantly was the announcement of the CSL, or better known, the College Swim League, with backing from Robert Kent, who had involvement in the ISL back when that was still up and running, paired alongside Kyle Sockwell. What else do we know about this right now, Des?
Not much else. I have a lot of questions for this. Not sure exactly how this is going to work. How does it coincide with the NCAA? How does it coincide with the CSCAA? But I'm really interested to kind of see what they have planned here. Definitely, I'm sure some more names in there. I mean, ISL was backed by a lot of money, and I assume that this is going to be similar. So really interested to see that. We have right now confirmed two teams. NC State and Ohio State have both been confirmed to be a part of the CSL, and I believe they stated that there will be 12 teams total. So interested to see what other teams are coming out and are going to be a part of this and kind of how it's going to work.
Yeah, it seems like a cool idea and something that basically fits with what we've seen Sockwell kind of pursuing over the last year or two and what he's been doing this year as well. I think this is definitely a product that I think makes sense for him to be working towards, and he finally found the right person in Robert Kent to kind of pair alongside him with the financial backing and the experience coming from the ISL. So my one complaint about this is that it's cool we had the announcement, but really no information to go along with it. And so that leaves a lot of questions and open the door to a lot of criticism, I think, from the swim fans out there of, is this just going to be stupid, or what's this actually going to look like? I think to make this whole release, it would have been nice to have a little bit more information to go along with it. We know there's going to be 12 teams. I think there is going to be 6 meets, if I remember correctly, along those lines. So we'll see some sort of, we have Ohio State, NC State rumored to be in this. Other than that, you'd have to think teams like Texas, ASU would probably more than likely is going to be in it.
Yeah.
I don't know what their focus is going to be. I don't know if they're going to be shooting for top caliber teams. I hope that's what they do. Or are we going to see just, you know, some of the teams that have relationships with Sockwell or, you know, end up in the mix? I don't know. So,
yeah. Well, we'll see how that kind of plays out. Exciting, though, nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely. From a current news side of things, as we look at the landscape of college swimming moving into championship season, we've seen it more and more in the previous years. The old team's not looking too good, or team looks great. How can we buff things up? Mm-hmm. We're seeing some midseason transfers start to roll in. We have some confirmed names so far. I'm sure there will be more to come as we see the first meets happen coming out of, or in the new semester. Let's just blast through some of the big names, I think, that we're seeing here, Dez. Anybody stand out to you right away that's coming in and adding to the madness?
Name for me is Tessa Giel. She's a Dutch swimmer from the Netherlands, and she got second last year at World Championships short course meters behind Gretchen Walsh. It's mentioned that if you convert her 100 fly time to yards, which, again, take that with a grain of salt, she would have been third last year at NCAAs behind Walsh and Husk. So, obviously, is her conversion a one-for-one? No, probably not. But she was silver at Worlds, and she can cook in the 100 fly. So, keep an eye on her. Another name for me was Chris Mihailov. He is a stud from South Africa, is going to Georgia next year. This upcoming winter. I got to see him swim in person. He's an absolute stud, and I'm interested to see kind of what he adds to the freestyle group and possibly even butterfly at Georgia.
Everyone's got to love the good old swim time converter, or the other time converter options that are existing. I guess for a little bit of context, the time converter is a tool that you can use to, if you swim long course meters and you can convert your time to short course yards, and it gives you an estimate of maybe how fast you'll be. There are certainly times where there can be some sort of accuracy associated with the converter, and other times where it basically means nothing. So yep. With some of these things, SwimSwam, it being their product, they like to, you know, they always admit that it's not perfect, but they love to use that in their articles as well as they talk about some of these guys. So we'll see.
A few other names. Mizuki Harai, Tennessee, currently holds the 100 long course meter junior world record, which is definitely going to bring some speed to Tennessee. He's been sub 52, I believe, in the 100 free long course meters, which is absolute freakish speed. Texas is actually bringing in three dudes that are going to help boost their depth like they need anymore. Alexei Glavinsky, Evan Bailey, and Sari Masuik. He's a Poland backstroker, and he is very, very good. He will definitely add some depth to their backstroke room, which they already have Kosh and Moglen, who are both, you know, looking to eye up NCAA titles in the 100 and 200 backstroke.
Yeah, this one, too, with those Texas guys. I mean, even with a number of these, you know, there's so much talk preseason about what these SEC rosters look like, and it seems like none of these teams really have an issue with this roster cap situation. Everyone's bringing in midseason transfers. Texas is adding three guys to their team. It's just the Wild West out there. So
it really is.
It's tough to see a Texas team getting even stronger going in post midseason, but I mean, come NCAA's time, that's going to be a fun team to watch. Beyond that, Anastasia Gorbenko is going to Louisville, Israeli Olympian. She is extremely talented. Mm-hmm. That lots of experience there. Yeah.
Alex Shackle, Indiana, will finally show up for the Hoosiers this winter.
She's been training at Carmel, though, or is she
I do not know. But she'll be representing the Hoosiers nonetheless, and she is going to obviously boost that woman's side of things. They have a very solid team there on both sides. And UVA Virginia is adding Nina Jazzy, originally signed with Michigan, but seems like they're bringing in another sprint freestyler to Virginia here this upcoming winter.
Yeah. We should mention, too, on the Alex Shackle situation, her brother, Aaron.
And Andrew.
And Andrew, both of them,
both
are
of them.
Swimming. They currently train with their club team, Carmel Swim Club, elsewhere in Indiana, and then just compete on Indiana University team. So that's a little bit of an interesting situation. Maybe we'll see that with Alex as well, yet to be seen. But that has been clearly working for the Shackle family up until this point this year. So I think with that, that's most of the big names that we see coming into the fold of the NCAA scene
mm-hmm.
coming up. So I'm sure we'll see more. I would be hard pressed for someone to tell me that Cal is not going to have someone coming in. We've heard lots of there was lots of chatter about Mr. Whiffen coming in, boosting the Cal distance even more so. That'll be yet to see, and I'm interested to know about that. It was only a year ago where Cal tried to bring none other than Brooks Curry to the NCAA team post.
Not sure what happened there, but Whiffen's little brother actually seems for Cal, so it would make sense if he ended up there.
Yeah. So that's something to keep an eye on. You always got to keep an eye on Cal's first dual meet coming off the semester break, just to see who might pop up on that roster. So
Jordan always tries to sneak someone in there.
it's always good. All right, let's get into the main focus of this episode, which will be the discussion about what is, I don't know if the best word is dominant or the best. How did you kind of view this discussion?
I kind of viewed it as just overall best, and kind of how we broke down each team is we kind of picked some of the most dominant teams in recent memory and some that have dated back even to 1992, 93. And we went through the results. We compiled how many A finalists, how many B finalists, how many winners, and how many records they had as a team that year at NCAAs and throughout the season. And then we also listed a list of names of kind of the big hitters that were swimming on the team at the time. One of the things we did not include actually was total overall points, because I think that kind of is affected by who else is swimming and what all the other teams are doing as well. But overall A finalists, overall B finalists, winners, and records.
Certainly it didn't make sense to include times or anything like that, mm-hmm. as we've seen swimflation, as it's coined, over time. We even saw in 2004 a NCAA meet that was swam in short course meters due to the Olympic year instead of short course mm-hmm. yards. So that was a little bit different. The scores are sometimes helpful in at least identifying a team that
dominant
was. I mean, yeah, if you to a certain extent, if you score, you know, in the 500s, the 500 point range at NCAAs, that's a pretty darn good team. Now, that's not to be said. We even in recent history, I think of matchups between, you know, Cal and Texas when they were going trading back and forth NCAA titles, where both teams were, I mean, elite. And those scores were close.
And neither team would put up 500 points. So we did not include the scores in there. I don't think that should go into our grading scale.
I think dominance should play a factor into deciding what the best team is. I mean, it's one thing when you have talent on your team, but to go in there and then just, you know, completely, you know, smash the other teams out of the water. I think that is a factor that should be at least weighed in equally, at least. So let's get into the team. Let's just go through the teams that or the teams and the years that we identify in this
All right. Yeah. First up is Texas, and Texas was a team where they've obviously won a plethora of.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father, and with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required, and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Chibley titles, but we ended up choosing 2017 Texas. Auburn, a lot of these teams had a lot of amazing years, but Auburn, we ended up choosing 2004. Stanford, we wanted to choose 1992, but they did not have results for 1992. So we ended up choosing 1993, which they ended up winning as well. Arizona State, 2024. Cal 2019, and then Michigan 2013.
That's what we got right there. Is
six teams? Yeah,
six teams. Ranging pretty far. Yeah, I mean that's I think it was also helpful to pick teams that were a little bit spread. I mean, you could have taken when you were taking Cal 27 or 2019 and 2018 or whatever, Texas 2017 and 2016. I think it was helpful just to, you know, pick hopefully the best. I mean, I try to pick the best year in that little dynasty or those classes that existed, those teams during
this is the thing. We could have picked, you probably could have picked five Texas and Cal teams if you really want. You could have picked five Auburn teams. Like, so we tried to narrow it down to what we kind of thought was their best year out of their dominance run.
Absolutely. So let's go. Should we go years order? Do we want to start Texas? Should we go back, start with Stanford?
Let's start with Stanford. Let's go by year.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Go ahead.
We ended up doing Stanford 1993. Again, I believe 1992 was a faster year for them. In the NCAA results in 1993, most of the records actually came from 92. But on the 1993 team, we had Eric Maurer, Trip Zedlitz, Derek Weatherford, Bill Schnell, and Tyler Mayfield were some of the big names. They had 22 A finalists, 13 B finalists, 6 winners, and 0 NCAA records. So while this team had not many NCAA records and maybe not as many wins as some of their teams, they were just absolutely dominant in their depth with 13 B finalists and 22 A finalists. That is the most B finalists out of any team on this list.
Yeah, 35 total final swims is
pretty spectacular.
Pretty darn good. That's a deep team through and through. Now, I mean, I wish we knew more. Des and I weren't running around at this phase of the NCAA swimming scene. But I certainly know we swam under Jeff Kostoff at Minnesota, who swam at Stanford. I don't know what years he was there. He was in
late 80s.
And so we certainly gained an appreciation for the caliber of teams that Stanford was putting up during this era. And this is very evident with this team. It's no joke to be putting up that many final swims. In addition, mm-hmm. getting 6 winners is not too shabby. Not too shabby. I think if we had the results to go back and look at 92, as we looked through the results, a lot of the NCAA records that stood in 93 had been set in 92. So when you look at probably that roster, you would even see more NCAA records produced from that team,
yeah,
than was shown in 93.
Next would be Auburn 2004. This was one of the short course meters years that Casey was talking about. Freddie Bousquet, Mark Gangloff, and Eric Chanteau were some of the big names. A lot of big names on this team, names that we recognize, names that coach now, names that were longtime swimmers for the U.S. or for different countries. They had 31 A finalists. I'm going to say that one more time. They had 31 A finalists. That is ridiculous. They had 10 B finalists, 5 winners, and then 5 NCAA records. But we're going to put an asterisk next to the NCAA records because, again, it was short course meters. And I think they swam short course meters in the year 2000 as well, correct?
Yeah, I think just twice.
So, I mean, yes, they're NCAA records, but you're going to have more when you're only swimming it once every 4 years.
For sure. Yeah, that's an interesting one. You think, I mean, I guess I can't say for sure that, I mean, I would have to imagine the NCAA, the roster sizes were the same back then, 18 swimmers, divers counting as a half of an athlete. So you can probably mm-hmm. have close to, and Auburn that year did have a good diving program. So in that year, I would say, let's say they had 20 guys going to NCs. Everyone on average swims 2 or 3 events. The make it back proportion for those athletes, as well as the proportion of that we're making it back in A finals, is ridiculous. So
yeah,
that is for me, absolutely right off the bat, one of the most impressive NCAA performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's a pretty ridiculous one. I mean, they had record stand. I mean, they had world records. I was looking at, they had relay world records. They had individual world records at this NCAA meet. And just some really, really big names. Those Auburn teams back then were built just differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And they during that early to that super suit era, they were mm-hmm. ridiculous. They then brought in Cesar Cielo shortly thereafter. They were just,
they had the infamous 2009 200 freestyle relay
The one that could never be broken.
Quite literally didn't get broken until 2023. So 14 years later, which all those other records that happened that year were broken shortly after. So just Auburn dynasty itself, just absolutely ridiculous. And we definitely had to put a team in there. And 04 just seemed like the most dominant one.
Yeah, for sure. With that, I think we moved to 2013 with Michigan during the Michigan golden years, at the NCAA level. That year, they produced 21 A finals, 11 B finals, two winners, and one record, with the core of Connor Yeager, Miguel Ortiz, Bruno Ortiz, Zach Turk, and Sean Fletcher. Big hitters there. Those Ortiz brothers were a problem for the rest of the NCAA back in the day. Connor Yeager is just an absolute stud. That's another really strong team to me, with 21 A finals is still, I mean, I know we were coming off of that Auburn team with 30, but as we looked at compared to some of the other teams, I mean, when you crack that 20 barrier of A finals, that is a ridiculous performance. You think that you're scoring at least 11 points off of an A final swim? Am I wrong about that?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not very many winners, but that's a really extremely, extremely deep team.
Yeah. A very good Michigan team, but I might even say that it's not the best Michigan team of all time. They have 19 claimed NCAA championships in swimming, but we could not find the results for 18 of those. Their 1995 team, I know, has been known to be one of the fastest and most dominant. But again, we couldn't find the results for that. And 2013 was a hell of a year for Michigan as well. Connor Yeager going 410 in the 500. Like Casey said, those Ortiz brothers were just holding it down on relays for this Michigan team.
Yeah, looking back at 1995, the Michigan men won that meet over Sanford 561 to 475. So coming out of that with almost 100-point margin of victory is certainly if we get our hands on those results, we'll have to
share those.
Yeah, exactly. What else do we got on that team there? Anything?
No, that's solid team. Don't think it's going to hold up next to some of these other teams, but very, very solid team through and through.
And it should be mentioned as we go through some of these last couple of teams, this few teams here. These are certainly the prime years of, more so Dez and I being in the sports, whether it's being in college or high school, when we were really in tune and watching some of these meets. And certainly some of the ones that we followed most closely and have really vivid memories of some of these performances that were put up. So that
possibly some recency bias for sure. Next would be Texas 2017. Listen to the list of these names. Joseph Schooling, Willa Cohn, John Shebit, Townley Haas, Clark Smith, Jack Conger, and then Ringgold was another one. 24 A finals, 7 B finals, 11 winners, and 5 records. That was a team that was dominant while they were also swimming in the Dressel era. Like, you are being dominant, you're winning relays, and you also have to perform against possibly the greatest short course swimmer of all time. And to be dominant as they were, is pretty ridiculous. Will LeCone, 200 breast record, stood for until Leon broke it recently. Jack Conger, 200 fly record. They had multiple dudes, 43 in the 100 fly with Conger and Schooling. That was also the Schooling glory days when he won the Olympics in 2016 and then came out of that and just absolutely dominated on the NCAA turf as well.
I think they had most of the relay records that year, or a few of the relay records. Joe Schooling definitely took the brunt of the existence of Caleb Dressel during this time frame, overlapping, especially in the 100 fly, which you could argue is his best event.
And that's a swimmer who obviously was very good, but he was overshadowed by Dressel for all of his years when he was at Texas on the short course scene. And he was absolutely throwing down 50 freestyle, 18.6, 43 in the 100 fly. Like, that dude could throw down, but like you said, he was the one that was going up against Dressel just day in and day out and just taking blow after blow.
All I'm saying is he got the last laugh. He went to the Olympics 2016, uh-huh. Got that gold in the 100 fly, and then he basically he pieced right out of the sport. Or 2021 he won. Is that right? I don't know.
No, he won in 2016.
He did win in 2016.
So mm-hmm. Anyway, it was because that was last go. He won the Olympics, had a great NCAA season, and then was like, all right, guys, I'll see you never. I will say, though, Singapore actually treats their Olympic medalists correctly, and he got a lot of money from Singapore for winning a gold medal, as he should.
Yeah, this was an interesting Texas team to me because a lot of wins, honestly, not an insane amount of B finals with seven, but this, you gotta remember, it wasn't the 2017 NCs, but this was the time frame, I think maybe 2018, 2019, when Texas had the infamous 5A final 100 fly event where they qualified five people in the A final, the 100 fly. So they were just an A final machine team during this phase, which was, you're going to win if you put up 24 A finalists. And I think that makes it almost more impressive. Not only did they have a bunch of people showing up to the meet, they barely had anybody, like, they were almost on a whole nother level where it's hard enough to make it back. They weren't making it back. They were basically all A final making it back.
Yes, so. Basically all A finals. And they were so good. I will say I was kind of stuck between this team and the 2018 team. And I mean, there's so many Texas teams that are just ridiculous. But yeah, this team, I think just the star power they had and how many NCAA records they had really, really kind of put them over the top. And not to mention as well, like I mentioned Dressel, but this was also Ryan Murphy's senior year. Mm-hmm. So they have just two total powerhouses that they have to work around and go up against, and they still dominate as much as they did.
I would say, yeah, I mean, backstroke that year was definitely not their strong suit. John Shebit was good, and they hadn't, I don't think, had the addition of Austin Katz yet at that point.
Him in 2018, I believe.
Yeah. So that those were certainly, once Ryan Murphy exited, then it was the Shebit and Katz show for a few years when they just ran it up at NCs. So I would say that would probably, I mean, they still broke the medley records that year, I believe. But I think backstroke isn't where they were the strongest necessarily. But yeah, they certainly
had say that. I mean, Shebit still went, 38 back, right? Like, they just didn't have the depth then in that they did in other events, for sure.
So, Clark Smith, I think, deserves a shout, too. He won the 500 and the mile that year and he was ridiculously good.
He got the NCAA
record. He was one of the first under, I think he was like 408 that year or something. First 410.
Him and Townley were both 408 that year.
The prime years of Townley Haas.
Townley Haas. That was like, he was very good, obviously, coming out of high school, but his freshman, sophomore year, people were like, oh, this kid's going to be good.
He went 130 points at this NCs, and then I believe the 2018 then was under 120.
Yes, went under. He was the first one under.
So,
Kieran Smith close after.
To me, and once again, it's recency bias, but the star power that this team had was ridiculous. Like,
yeah, I mean, just namesake alone.
I don't know if Clark Smith ever made an Olympic team, and Jack Hong. I mean, the Olympians and NCAA champions. It's a really, really good team. Let's talk
next.
About Cal 2019 or
yeah.
Cal 2019, A finals, 25 B finals, 7 winners, 5 and no records. Is that right?
Yeah, I the no records thing trips me up because I could have sworn that this team is. We could have.
I won't guarantee the accuracy of that, but that team was led by Sean Grisha, Trenton Julian, Andrew Celestar, Ryan Hoffer, Powell Sendick, Daniel Carr, Reese Whitley, Zeng Kwa, Bryce Mefford. This was KT Stowe core high school memories of watching this team swim at NCAAs. Mm-hmm. What, my junior year of high school, and I hated Texas and I loved Cal at the time.
Everyone loved Cal at the time. I was right there with you.
Yeah. I hated Texas dominance, and I just wanted Cal to get in there and get the win. And this team was legit. They actually topped the A-final performances from, is that right? Yeah, they topped the A-final performances by one of that Texas team in 2017 and had the same number of B-finals. Now, they had way less winners and probably just say less records. But in terms of A and B-final performances, they were actually a better overall team.
Yeah, no, they didn't have any winner or records this year. They were just ridiculously deep at the top end. One shout that I will say is this is a hot take. Maybe I think Andrew Celestar will go down as one of the most underrated swimmers, and specifically short course swimmers of all time. 130 point the 200 free, 138 2 IM, 336 4 IM. He was a 139 200 fly, 147. 148, 200 breasts, like just whatever you needed this guy to do. You need him to be a sprinter on your relay. You need him to some breaststroke, fly, whatever it was. He was able to do it. And he was just an absolute Swiss Army knife for Cal in the years he was there, and very, very dominant as well.
You're exactly right. And I think he maybe didn't have quite the international presence to bolster his name for the rest of the swimming community, but I think NCAA.
Yeah, he has a couple Olympic medals, I believe.
I know, but when you look, he swam, came through at the same time. I don't want to be hating on Celestar right after I said I love this team. But when you look, he came through with the Dressels of the world, and it certainly made it hard. And I think another thing that contributed to, I think it makes him a better overall swimmer, but something that he didn't even swim the same event every year at NCs. He almost like slotted in where they needed him. And that, like, when you have name recognition in the same event every single year, when you have Dressel winning the 100 free every, or the 50 free every single year, or Ryan Murphy winning the 100 back every single year, I think that ended up kind of like burying him down. I think he was probably the, if not one of the most important pieces of this team to kind of will them over the hump to get the win in this those years. So
he walked so Leon Marchand could run. I will say that again. He walked so Leon could run.
That's inspirational, Maz.
Not as dominant as Leon in some events, but whatever you need him to swim, he would get in. He'd be competing for NCAA title, and there are not many swimmers out there that can do that. Some other big names, obviously. Ryan Hoffer, an absolute dog. He was supposed to be Dressel 2.0. Never quite broke 18, but he was a dog.
He totally broke 18. What are you talking about?
In the flat start 50 free? No.
Who are you talking about right now? Ryan Hoffer?
Yes.
I will bet you $1 million.
I will bet you $1 million.
All right.
Dude, you're tweaking.
No. Okay, we'll continue though. Ryan Hoffer,
1833.
Are you saying that he never did break 18, or you're saying
he never broke 18?
Okay, all right.
He never. There's only two people that have ever been 17.
Never went 18 before. I was about to.
No. Sorry.
Your screen, not you. But no, I think he is another one of those kids for me. I remember watching him back in high school when he was swimming at Winter Juniors, and he went like just had an insane.
Oh, that Winter Juniors
was one of the best performances of all time.
That 100 freestyle video will go down as one of the greatest videos of all time.
Yeah, I think he was one of the ones as well. I know underwaters were certainly, they're starting to become a revolution, but to me, from the moment that he was a high schooler who was kicking out to 15 off every single wall underwater, and I think really revolutionized that aspect of things. And then he got stuck in the Caleb Dressel shadow for a few years in college, and then finally his senior year broke through and won the 50 and the 100. I did not win the 100 fly, but he finally, like, that was like, it was a feel-good story for me of someone who, I was a big Hopper fan.
Yeah.
Got the NCAA title that year and a couple of wins under his belt. So
I think that Ryan Hopper had an outstanding career. But like you said, he was in Dressel's shadow. And when Dressel graduated, everyone thought that he was going to break all Dressel's records. And while he didn't do that, he had an outstanding NCAA career.
Yeah. He did. It's tough timing when you happen to swim with the best short course swimmer, well, debatably the best short course swimmer of all time. So, Reese Whitley was another name who he never broke through to win an NCAA event, but he was qualifying for A finals from the time that he was a freshman. And I think he was a freshman in 2019 or a sophomore in 2019. He was a great piece for them, especially after they lost Telstar. They needed breaststroke help, and he was a big piece of that. Daniel Carr was a great fill-in for them after the exit of Ryan Murphy. Bryce Meffer always put up points in the backstrokes for them. Zenqua was.
This was the year. This was the year that Cal barely beat Texas, I believe. Let me look at the final scores. It was 560 to 475, but every point counted. And I remember Carr had a slip on his start because the backstroke wedge, and they re-swam him, and he made an A final, and it kicked the Texas dude out, I'm pretty sure. And there was a lot of drama there at this NCAAs.
I feel like I remember there just being, and maybe it was completely fabricated in my head, but I felt like there was so much bad blood between the Dave Durden and Eddie Reese during the time that it was like Cal on one side of the pool, Texas on the other. It was just like slugfest just every single year.
Yeah.
And then you have
They're
something like
awesome big names at each other.
Daniel Carr slips on his backstroke start in the prelims. Then David somehow gets in there, gets him a re-swim, and he goes straight to the A final. So those are the swims that, I mean, it ended up not being close maybe in the scorebook, but that's like a big, I mean, that would be demoralizing from the standpoint of,
oh yeah.
So that's, oh man, good times. That's a good memory there. Oh man,
yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah,
here's what happened. He kicked a Texas swimmer out of the B final, so Texas went from 1-2 in the A, 1 in the B to just 2 in the A because Carr kicked him out. And again, like, points are points. Like, that's really, really big. He actually kicked Katz out of the A final, or B final, sorry.
A young Austin Katz.
Who do we have next? Moving on.
ASU is the last team that we got here. 2024.
ASU 2024. Maybe A-final. Some reason.
Yeah, probably recency bias here, but I think I'll explain why I think they have a place here in this discussion. 21 A finals, 12 B finals, 5 winners, and 3 records. And certainly there's probably some bias too with Leon Marchand, the existence of Leon Marchand. But I think what really stands out to this team, and people can argue whether this is even a valid take, but when we talked Stanford, we talked Michigan, we talked Auburn, Texas, Cal. These are all teams that were perennial powerhouses in the sport, and had, I could argue, kind of their golden years, dynasties, whatever you want to call it, where they were in the top or fighting for the win multiple years in a row. I look at ASU in 2024. 2023, they had a great year. 2022, they were basically nowhere. And if you look earlier than that, they barely even had a presence at NCs on a yearly basis. I mean, a couple.
They didn't have a program for a while then.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so when you look at the rise of this team, I think it warrants recognition to go from, you know, in the 20s at NCs to, they were like 7th or 6th or something, 5th in 2023, and then straight to the top in 2025 is ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
And now you could still say they're in their golden years. They definitely lost a lot after the exit of Bob Bowman from the team over to Texas. But when I look at the names on this roster, Liam Marchand, Jack Dolan, Hubert Koch, Ilya Karun, Patrick Salmon, Julian Hill, Zalan Sarkany, those are insane names. And for them to somehow gather the gathering of talent on that roster was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the epiphany of Leon Marchand, who just that year had bar Caleb Dressel, the best NCAAs ever. So
yes, I would argue this is actually wasn't even his best NCAAs ever. Right, this is the year. I mean, he had a better year probably 2023 with his 4IM, but
yeah.
He also went
402,
a ridiculous 500, 402. So. Does this team belong in the conversation? Yes. They were the dethroning of Texas and Cal. And obviously, yes, Texas is back. But back in 2022 to 2024, Eddie Reese was kind of nearing his retirement, and Texas was not looking like Texas until Bob Bowman came in and totally flipped the script. So the dethroning of Texas, the dethroning of Cal, yes, they belong here. Do they stack up bar for bar with the rest of these teams? Yeah. But you know, you take out Leon and they don't come nearly close, but I would say they do stack up. Just a crazy good team. Marchand totally anchoring them down.
Yeah. And it was kind of that like meteoric rise to the top where it just felt. And I mean, everyone knew they were dominant that year, but for them to then go in and actually like double down on it and win the meet by basically 100 points over Cal, who had, you know, won the year before. I also should quickly mention that ASU they were second actually in 2023, and they must have been fifth or sixth the year before. They were second during Leon's insane sophomore season.
I think his freshman year they were fifth-ish.
Okay, yeah. So I misspoke there. They were, but then to score 430 points in 2023 and then jump to 523 the following year was, I mean.
He lost some names too. Like Grant House was on that 2023 team and he scored a lot of points, was really big on relays. He left. And they brought Ilya in, and Ilya totally transformed that team, I think, from the sense of they had zero finalists in the flies, specifically the 100 fly. And then you throw Ilya in there, and he gets you points in an event that you desperately need to, and an event that you desperately need for relays as well.
Even names like Patrick Salmon, these are probably some of the guys that we miss in some of these older teams, but Patrick Salmon stands out to me as someone who didn't win an event, but was like, he's one of those like anchor pieces that is going to make it back in three events, be on all the freestyle relays, and was, I mean, had a lights out NCAAs that year. And you don't always remember those names as well when you don't follow the meet closely and it kind of experience it in real time. But to me, when I see a Patrick Salmon on that roster, I was like, that's a person who, you know, from 23 to 24 would have been a difference maker. So
yes, 100%.
Before we get into the discussion of our picks of which one of those teams is the best of all time, I think we should at least mention that we may be on the trajectory to have a new contender in this conversation come March of this year after the Texas Longhorns swim at NCAAs. We talked a little bit some of the pieces that they're adding to their already insane roster that they're currently have. Do you think there's validity with that, Des?
I do.
Come on, disagree with me.
Like, are they going to be one of, like, could they get put into one of these top six slots? Sure. Are they going to dethrone one of the teams we might talk about? I don't know. It really depends. At midseason, they were looking and firing on all cylinders. You know, I think it comes down to the depth piece and like relays. Like, are they going to have the pieces to throw down a ridiculous 200 freestyle relay? Like, kind of sprint free has kind of been one of their weak spots until last year they brought in Giuliano and they don't have him anymore. Yeah. But yes, they have the pieces for it. Koch, I think, is going to have one of the best short course NCAAs I think we will ever see. Especially last year after he shattered the 200 back record and said he's still trying to figure out how to swim it. Auckland is looking really good. Maurer's going to be on it by the time NCAAs rolls around. And they have breaststrokers where they have four guys that went 50 point. Like, yeah. They are in a spot where they could definitely dethrone a couple of these teams, I think.
Yeah. I think they certainly have the potential to do what that Auburn team in 2004, like we mentioned there, where you have multiple events where you're putting four guys in an A final. You look at their breaststroke group, it could be a crapshoot this year. Like we said, it's 50 points a dime a dozen these days.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly that puts you in the conversation to have multiple bodies in an A final. I look at their backstrokes too, the 200 back, especially with the addition of Maziuk. You have Modulin, you have Koch, you have Maziuk. That's going to be disgusting there too. So they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And maybe we need to review this conversation come March. We won't jinx them by outright saying that they're going to be the best of all time, but I think the possibility is out there for them.
For sure. All right. Let's hear your take. Who do you think was the most dominant, the most put together NCAA swim team of all time?
I'll go out there and say it. I think Auburn 2004. I think
really
that team is 31 A finals is a ridiculous performance. A star-studded roster in a short course meters year, which was had to have been a weird situation. That's a really, 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 and maybe I should even go dig into some of the storylines that we might not even see with that meet. But this to have that many A finals is unheard of in this day and age. Yeah. I mean, I think since then the most we've seen is like that 25 range, and to have six more even than that is ridiculous. So
yeah,
I can't get by that. And yeah, that's my pick. Auburn Tigers, 2004.
Auburn Tigers. I'm going to have to disagree with you there. I actually think that this 2017 Texas Longhorn team was the greatest team of all time. I'm going to, again, preface this with you are swimming against Caleb Dressel. You are swimming against Ryan Murphy, who are just winning 2 to 3 events and dominating those events. And you are still putting up a ridiculous amount of points. You're breaking records in relays. You're winning almost every single relay. And I just think that kind of tops Auburn. They won, I believe, almost every single relay. They broke 3 NCAA records in relays. You had Jack Conger's 200 fly record that wasn't broken until, 2 years ago, last year. You have Will Lacone's record, which stood for the longest time. And you had someone like Joseph Schooling, who may have not won individual, but when you needed him, he showed up on relays and he went 1-for-1, bar for bar with Dressel when you needed him to. I think that this team, Clark Smith, you look at Jack Conger, you look at Townley Haas, who was a sophomore at the time and who got second in the 500 freestyle. They had two dudes 408 when sub 410 was like not really a thing. I just really think that how dominant this 2017 Texas team was, and they had to race against Cal, really takes the cake for the best team of all time.
Fair enough, it does. But your Texas 2017 boys might have had to swim against Taylor Dressel, big whoop. My Auburn 2004 team: Aaron Pearsall, Brendan Hansen, Garrett Weber Gale, Ian Crocker. Who else? Matt Grievers was swimming. I don't want to I want to hear it.
Peter Van.
How good were those guys in short course? Sure.
That's
I will say. I will say that the short course meters does throw a little bit of a wrench into things. Like, how were all teams able to train short course meters? Were like, that's what my argument's going to be is, like, I think if you throw that meat into a short course yards pool, maybe it might be a little different. I don't know. Auburn had a lot of foreigners, and you know those foreigners grew up swimming short course meters, and I think that brings a little bit of an advantage.
Going after the foreigners again. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's a fair, it's fair. It may on paper seem, short course yards and short course meters are similar, but it, at the same time, it is a different, it is different. And so, when you have a team that's, takes people a bit to adjust to different courses, and if you have a team that wasn't, yeah, I don't know, training as much for meters, you, I mean, who knows? Who knows? We don't, we won't ever know, but,
I will say, I don't think you could really go wrong. Oh.
Not changing my mind.
I don't think you go wrong with any of these six teams, really. And again, like, for their times, they were all dominant. And if you're listening in and you're like, well, how did you miss Michigan 1995? Like, let us know, right? Like, what team did we miss? Are there some results for some meets that we can't find out there? You know, send them to us. Get us, put us on it. Put us on Michigan 95.
Let Des know
put
how bad
Stanford 8-7. Yeah.
Let
come
Des
on.
Know how bad his takes are. All right. Actually, I'm surprised Des, when I gave the take about Texas for this year, I'm surprised he didn't come back at me with UVA men. I don't know. Maybe the
no man
come to the rescue.
No.
Maybe in a few years. Maybe. With that though, I don't think we have. We're so the plan from here will be we will also soon be doing a women's version of this discussion once we do a little bit more research on the topic.
I think that discussion actually gets a little more interesting. I think it's a little bit.
Yep.
We could argue about the first place for that one for a while.
For a while, yeah, for sure. So let us know what we missed and give us your takes, names we missed, teams that we missed. And I think this is a fun one. We can do some more different versions of this. And I'm always one to hop back into the old results of the results of old and reminisce on the glory days.
The glory days.
With that, thanks for tuning in, everybody. And we're going to catch you in the next one.